So has anyone else gotten a kick out of these last few weeks of all the people, all the tourists that are around that are getting to really like find out what American food is all about? Has anyone been checking that out on social media? My favorite is the ones that are tasting biscuits and gravy for the first time. Because they're just like, what is this? It looks horrible. Why are you feeding me this? And then they take a bite. And everything changes. Their entire life is transformed in that moment. And when our government has to send out a tweet saying, please stop putting bottles of ranch dressing in your carry-ons, you know that we are making an impact on the world, right? And, you know, I've never really been a huge soccer fan unless I am watching someone that I care about playing it. But this has really kind of brought everyone in to that fold, brought everyone into to this. And it's really special when our team is outperforming expectations, when we're doing better than people thought we would, and, you know, there's a chance that they can do something. On the flip side of that, it's always hard when our athletes and our people and our teams, they're the favorites, and they're coming into the match or the race or whatever it may be as the favorites. And see, us, there's something we excel at, and that's sprinting, especially in the 100-meter and the men's. And we put together, you know, world champions, we put together medalists, and especially when you get to a team event, because countries can have, like, one guy faster than us, but when you put four together, I mean, we should be hard to beat. Problem is, year after year, Olympics after Olympics, we have not lived up to expectations. In 2008 in Beijing, we dropped the baton in the heats and we got eliminated. 2016 in Rio, we were disqualified after an illegal exchange. Tokyo in 21, we failed to reach the final after another poor exchange. And then 24 in Paris, we were disqualified after a botched handoff outside the exchange zone. Do you see a pattern here? Some of the best athletes in the world are missing one of the most important parts in this race. It's the exchange. It's the passing the baton. It's the ability to give that piece, that baton to the next person, saying, carry it on. Carry on this race and move forward. And it's not just relays. It's in business too, right? Everyone saw like Disney melt down after Bob Iger retired, and they had to bring him back after that whole mess. But there's been good exchanges as well. Apple's still going strong after the loss of their founder and the new CEO taking over. Well, what about churches? You are in a church, at least the body of this church started in 1905. 1905. We are older than the denomination. That means generation after generation had to be prepared to hand off the baton, to pass the mantle to the next generation, year, time after time after time, and do it in a way that they could keep going and keep running the race that was given to them. That's incredible, because there's churches not only in our community but across the country that last maybe a couple decades, if that. And their doors get closed. We see that in the Bible as well, especially in 1 and 2 Kings. We see generation after generation, starting from Solomon, and he had his own crazy issues. Despite being the wisest man ever to live, he had his own issues. And then his sons and all the chaos they caused. And then the next kings after that. And every exchange from there forward was just pure chaos, splitting the nation in half, splitting the people in half. But in 1 and 2 Kings, we also see a strong exchange, one that's done right, one that's done well, and that is from Elijah to Elisha. Give me some grace here, because Elijah and Elisha, saying back and forth gets really hard. So, Elijah to Elisha. And I wanted to give some background to Elijah's life, and I usually like to kind of storytell through that, but Elijah has done a ton of things, and that to really spell all that out gets really complicated. So I had ChatGPT make a My Story meme of him. There he is right there. Now, first of all, Elijah says home base, the wilderness. He is a guy that lives in the wilderness, survives in the wilderness, and he comes in and he is calling the kings out and he is calling the people back to God. So that is his entire job. He's a prophet, truth teller, miracle worker, people caller, outer, and remover of idols from the people of God. His diet is Raven Catering. This should really help you want to go in and dig into 1 and 2 Kings, because there's some crazy stuff, especially with him. Now, there's a problem with this. When I picture a guy living in the wilderness, coming into town and calling everybody out, I don't picture this beautiful guy right here. This guy's way too pretty to be someone that just spends all their time in the wilderness. This is someone that belongs in one of those romantic drama shows that some of you watch, like straight out a Virgin River coming out of the mountains or something, whatever that show is called. He's just way too pretty with his flowing locks. But I also don't want some crazy hillbilly up there. But there's got to be something in between in that moment. But no matter what, he's rough. He is walking into places where it's just chaos and just debauchery and everything that comes with it. He is specifically built for this time. And he single-handedly, especially in this moment, when he calls down fire on the prophets of Baal, like, he single-handedly takes the Bible from PG-13 up a notch, if you go in the original language. He is a rough dude called to this moment. So that's a little bit, but right down here, you see, I ran really far from Jezebel. And that's kind of where we pick up a little bit on the story. He runs really far. This moment in Mount Carmel happens. He takes care of all the prophets of Baal, and so Jezebel threatens his life, and for the first time he gets scared, and he runs, and he runs, and he runs, and he is done. So we find him on a mountain in the wilderness, and he is just asking God to take his life. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm tired. I am tired. I've been doing this for years, and God, in all his mercy and his grace, he lets him sleep, and he brings him along, and in a whisper, after having to shake the mountain he's on, in a whisper, calls him back out, and he tells him to go and find this guy named Elisha to become his successor. And that's where we pick up. We're going to be in 1 Kings chapter 19, verses 19 through 21. And we are going to go over to 2 Kings chapter 2 after that. So in 1 Kings chapter 19, verse 19, says this: So Elijah went and found Elisha, son of Shaphat, plowing the field. There were 12 teams of oxen in the field, and Elisha was plowing with the 12th team. Elijah went over to him and threw his cloak across his shoulders, and then walked away. So this crazy wilderness guy in this cloak, if you can bring that back up, this cloak, it's kind of looks light there. It is not light. This thing is meant for survival. This is a full-out animal skin, probably a sheepskin, that he has draped over him. It is meant, if there's a sandstorm coming in, to protect him from the elements. It is meant to wrap around his face. It is meant for him as a tool to survive the wilderness with. And so when he walks in, he simply just tosses it over his shoulders and just walks on. No words, no nothing. And Elisha, verse 20, Elisha left the oxen standing there and ran after Elijah and said to him, First, let me go kiss my father and mother goodbye, and then I will go with you. Give me a second. Let me go say bye to my parents. Let me give them the honor they have. I want to go with you. So apparently he knows Elijah, and it would make sense because Elijah has been running the entire nation, calling out the kings, causing all kinds of chaos and everything else, trying to bring the people back into God. So Elijah's going to be known, and Elisha's ready. Elijah replied to Elisha, "Go on back, but think about what I have done to you. Go back. Tell your parents bye. But I really want you to think about what this means, what it is that I have done to you. I have put my cloak." This is also, if we can go back, it is called a mantle. So that's where the passing of the mantle saying comes from. This is, you are going to take my place and you are going to run on. That is a commonly known thing. So think about what this means. Think about what God is calling you to. You've heard my stories. You've seen what I've had to go through. Are you ready? Count the cost before you take off and follow me in where God is leading us to. And we all hit moments like this. In fact, we should have this moment each and every morning when we wake up, especially when it comes to you guys. God is calling us each and every day into a deeper relationship with him. He is calling us into mission. And the closer we go, the farther down that path we go, things start to get crazier. So Elisha, verse 21, returned to his oxen and slaughtered them. He used the wood from the plow and built a fire to roast their flesh. He passed around the meat to the townspeople, and they all ate. Then he went with Elijah as his assistant, without hesitation. See, all of these oxen, this equipment, this means Elisha is comfortable. He's well off. He has got a good life, better than most people he's with. This is success. This is earning power. This is a comfortable, steady life. So when he counts the cost, when he looks forward, he knows that this, right here, this could be what calls him back. This could be what brings him back when things get hard out at doing God's work, when things get hard running through his mission. I can always come back to this, and Elisha says, huh, that slaughtered, the words for that is actually a term for sacrifice. These things that make his life comfortable, he is sacrificing to God. And he's using the equipment, just in case he wants to go get more oxen, to burn them with, to roast them with. There is nothing that's going to get in the way between me and the work that God has for me in this life. The calling that God has put on my life, I'm going to have nothing that I can go back to. And what does that look like for us? If God's calling us forward to be something else, to move forward in our relationship, to show him to the world, is it money that holds us back? Is it our social standing? Maybe keeps us from taking that step forward? What is it in each and every one of our lives when our feet hit the floor in the morning? What is the obstacle in the way between us and the life that God has called us to? Our only response to the calling of God is to burn it all and be ready for whatever he has for us. And from here, that's what Elisha does. We don't have a lot of information on the ins and outs from this moment to the place where Elisha takes forward. But we do know this. He is right next to Elijah day in and day out learning. He's a part of the mission. He's a part of the ministry. He's a part of the miracles and what's going on. Because later on, when Elisha does take the role, when he does succeed Elijah, he is first called the guy that poured water on Elijah's hands. They knew him as a servant in the mission of God before they knew him as a prophet. And it's in that service that they saw him with Elijah that they learned to trust him. They knew that he was the guy. So through all this mentoring, it's why we do what we do here. It's why we have a group of youth sitting here and spread out through this place. We want youth here with us. We want youth serving on Sundays, being a part of the mission, because that's what's growing. We don't have Sunday school. There's enough times where they get to go up and listen and just sit there. There's enough times in their life where they get to do that. Growing in God for the mission is about doing as much as learning. 2 Kings chapter 2, verse 6. Then Elijah said to Elisha, now they've gone through their mission. For whatever reason, everybody knows this day, this moment right here, God's going to take Elijah. His story's done. He's ran a good race. He's done everything he could to this moment, and now it's time. It's time for him to move aside and let Elisha take the wheel. So then Elijah said to Elisha, stay here, for the Lord has told me to go to the Jordan River. But again, Elisha replied, as surely as the Lord lives and you yourself live, I will never leave you. So they went together. This is the third time Elijah has told Elisha to stay behind in this little moment, in this little path to where they're going into the Jordan River. And each time, Elisha has come back with the same response. I'm with you. I'm with you till the end. I want to spend every moment learning and growing until it's my turn. We should think in this moment to after the resurrection of Jesus and he meets Peter on the beach. Because in that moment by the fire, Jesus asked Peter three times, do you love me? Feed my sheep. If you're ready for what I'm calling you to, then go feed my sheep. If you love me and you're ready to this for this life, then feed my sheep. It's the same. We should think of that as we're reading this. It's the same type of calling. One, a purpose and a mission. Seven, 50 men from the group of prophets also went and watched from a distance as Elijah and Elisha stopped beside the Jordan River. And all this part is everybody knew. In each of these spots, prophets stood and they said, hey, this is Elijah's day. He's going to be taken. Everybody knew what was coming. Everybody knew what was about to happen. Then Elijah folded his cloak together and struck the water with it. The river divided and the two of them went across on dry ground. And what this simply is, this is a, okay, I'm done. See, this is the same river coming into the promised land that Moses divided. Not the Red Sea, this is later. When the Israelites wandered through the deserts and they're coming into the promised land, this is the same spot, or not the same spot, but the same river that Moses divided coming in to claim the land for God, for the people of God. So what, this is just a reverse. This is Elijah stepping out and saying, okay, my work's done. This is for whoever's there to fight the fight, but my work's done. When they came to the other side, Elijah said to Elisha, tell me what I can do for you before I am taken away. What's one last thing? What is one last thing I can do before you start your journey? And Elisha replied, please let me inherit a double share of your spirit and become your successor. This isn't, I want to be greater than you. This isn't, I want to be this huge rock star of a prophet. This is, I am not good enough to keep the mission that you have been on. In fact, whatever you have, I need double of it to make it. This is a moment of humility for Elisha. And Elijah's response is, please let me, you have asked a difficult thing, Elijah replied. If you see me when I am taken from you, then you will get your request. But if not, then you won't. If God allows you to see what he is doing in this moment, more importantly, if your heart is open to see what God is doing in this moment, then you are going to get what you want. If your heart is ready for whatever God has in front of you, you're going to get what you want. You're going to be prepared and ready for the mission in front of you if you are ready. And as they were walking along and talking, suddenly a chariot of fire appeared, drawn by horses of fire. It drove between the two men, separating them, and Elijah was carried off by a whirlwind into heaven. Just like that, he's gone. Just like that. God knew their bond was so tight that Elisha was so connected to Elijah. The only way to successfully carry Elijah off was to do something crazy and send a chariot of fire between the two, separating him so he can take Elijah away, because he knew Elisha's response would be to grab and to hold on and to try to keep what he has right there. But this is Elisha's turn. This is his moment to bring the mission of God forward. And he can't do it with Elijah there. Elisha, verse 12, saw it and cried out, my father, I see the chariots of Israel. I see it. I see what God is doing. I see him working. I'm ready. So Elisha picked up Elijah's cloak. Elisha picked up the mantle which had fallen when he was taken. The only thing left is that mantle. The only thing left is the very thing that was thrown over the shoulders, calling Elisha to that life moving forward. That is the only thing left, and his response is to pick it up. He returned to the bank of the Jordan River. He struck the water with Elijah's cloak and cried out, where is the Lord, the God of Elijah? Then the river divided and Elisha crossed. One more time. Is God, are you with me? Because it's time. God, I need you. It's time. It's time to rule. It's a proper passing of the mantle, one that is years and years of one speaking into the life of the next. It is what churches like this are built on. Not separation, but a life of the next doing ministry with the rest, because they're not just the church of the next generation. They are the church of now. And the important thing with this is we're not passing down our methods. Methods come and go. They're going, and they are going to be living a life on mission to a group of people that look completely different than what we're ministering to now. The culture they are going to be speaking into is going to look different than the culture that we spoke into. We are not passing down the methods because our methods aren't going to work. Imagine if we tried to carry the same methods from 1905 until now, what that would be like. What we pass down is the love of Jesus. What we pass down is the ability for them to come to the feet of Jesus every moment they can. What we pass down is the heart of Jesus, so they are ready to tackle the world just like he did. Methods are going to change. The mission never will. I volunteer for the last, 8 or 9 years in youth ministry. I have my own role here, and then I volunteer in the church in youth ministry on Wednesday nights. And I started with a group of sixth graders. Some of them are in here right now. My middle child, our oldest son, Logan, his group. I walked with those boys for years. I had the honor and the privilege to walk with them for years and years and years. And there's some statistics out there. And it goes like this. There's a first place, which is always people's home. There's a second place, which is usually school, or if you're an adult, for work. Whatever that may be, they're formative places that you have to be at. Now the third place, that's where things get crazy. That's where there's a battlefield. And so for the church to be your third place, the kids, the youth, they have to want to be here at all costs. There has to be reasons for them to want to show up, to be a part of what's going on. No matter whether it's their youth events or their kids' events or the church as a whole, they have to want to be in that place. And you guys do an incredible job at creating opportunity for that. You guys are given so many resources, so much time. In fact, if you work in any of our next gen, if you volunteer in any of our next gen ministries, will you stand up? All the way from birth, all the way to high school. There's a lot of you in here, and some of you aren't standing up. Thank you. Yes, you guys too. You guys volunteer. We have about 150 people sometime through the month that give their time to give their hearts to the next generation of this church. That's incredible. And if you can see, so many of our youth are already doing the same. And in being that third place, it's not just about Wednesday nights. It's a whole package. It's Wednesday nights in the youth group. It's Sunday mornings right here, shoulder to shoulder with you guys. It's having opportunities to serve in kids' ministry or the coffee bar or on the greeting teams, to be part of the mission of Jesus right here with you guys. That is so important. That's why we don't have a Sunday school for youth. They sit and they listen enough. Doing, acting, being in the hands and feet of Jesus is just as important as sitting and listening and learning. You have to have both. And so going back to that group of Logan, I can look at all the kids that we had through those years, the ones that came in and out, the ones that were just there on Wednesdays, the ones that made this place truly their third place. And the statistics go like this. If someone, a kid or a youth, makes the church their third place, if they dive into every aspect they can and immerse themselves in the life of the church into service with Jesus, they continue on whenever they leave the home. They find a body of believers that they're a part of, they serve in the church, and they keep going. The less things that they do to make this their third place, the more likely they are to wash out and not find that body of believers, to lose their relationship with Jesus and to walk away. It's not perfect. It's not 100%. But I can look at every graduating year in our youth group and go, yep, they're the ones that are staying and they're the ones that are going. And we hope that those that walk out, that eventually when they have kids or whatever, they walk back into the church, but a lot of them never do. It is so important that this, that getting your kids to the feet of Jesus becomes priority number one over everything. Everything. And we are a sports family. But we will always choose a church camp over a sports camp. Always. Because that's what's going to matter later in life. Always. And again, the families you see that do that, or the families that you see raise Elishas. The worship team's going to come out, and we're going to worship again. And in this moment, I have a challenge for you while we're worshiping. What is your role? Again, this is an incredibly generous church. You allow so many things to happen. You make things affordable. You create opportunity. In the last 3 weeks, we have, or in this three-week block, we have Kanakuk, we have NYC for the high schoolers, and we have a middle schooler CIY. I don't know why we did this, but we did. Actually, most of it, we didn't have a choice in the date. But when you spread out the summer and you have art camp and cooking camp and lake parties and everything else, the amount of resources that goes into the next generation is why we have a ministry for the next generation that we have. So in this moment, what is your next step to help out that next generation? Maybe it's just continuing to be a part of the help in the financial areas. Maybe it's to continue to pray. When these kids go, we want you guys to be praying for all of these trips. For the God will show them something incredible. But in this moment, let's give our hearts to God and see what it is that is our role.